This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
In the Dhammapada, we find these well-known lines. Care is the path to the deathless. Carelessness is the path to death. The caring do not die. The uncaring are already dead. So Buddha's very last words, spoken to his closest followers who surrounded him at his deathbed, were these. Things fall apart. Tread the path with care. Whether or not that's what the Buddha actually said, I don't think we can actually know, but I found it interesting that that's what the last words the Buddha spoke about was basically, take good care. So, of course, this still reverberates to us as practitioners now. Take good care. Tread the path with care. And having been at the climate march yesterday with all the people, particularly listening to the young people, they seem to be very close to the fact that things fall apart, tread the path with care. And the urgency that we don't have the luxury to fall into paralysis, that we really need to express our care in this crisis as a social movement on a scale that's never been seen before, so that we're all aligned with the facts of what's happening, particularly those who can make policies and possibly do things to save the next generation. So we need us as people to not let up on this. So I would like to spend some time exploring a very important piece the Buddha developed, this notion of care. It's been very interesting, and to think about our schedule too, we put in caretaking, a very intentional period of working in silence where we take care of things. And we see as we take care of things, the buildings, the grounds, objects that support us, that we depend upon, the earth, in a sense, the whole thing is the earth, that when we take care, we feel care. We are care. We are cared for. We care for each other in that process. So in Pali, there's a couple people that wrote about it, but in Pali it's called apamada, which is actually a negative term. And a lot of the Pali uses a kind of negative term. It's a curious language because it expresses positive values negatively. So directly translated, it might mean non-negligence, non-indifference, non-carelessness, non-nonchalance, non-heartlessness. And we can probably stretch it to non-mindlessness, non-apathy, non-cynicism. So like karuna, like the word for compassion, our word compassion or love, there's many that actually don't, we need several to get at karuna, what the Pali means by karuna, this kind of compassion, this kind of karuna. It said there's method in this Pali madness of expressing positive values in negative form. The vocabulary indicates that we need to leave, what we need to leave behind in order to cultivate a value. So the Buddha clearly saw care not only as a positive term, but in fact as the ultimate dharmic virtue. So now when we take the second part of the word, pamada, appamada, appmada, this translates something like heedlessness. And the means not. So one of the examples of a person who is suffering pamada is a person who has somehow lost control. Sound familiar? A person who is drunk. Someone who is completely out of it on alcohol is said to be in a state of pamada. And we probably all have a sense of what that means somewhere in our life, perhaps. Perhaps firsthand experience. A state in which we are no longer very coherent. Where we are rather careless in what we say and what we do. A state in which we may be, in fact, be quite unaware of what's going on. Like the next morning when we meet the people we were with the night before and we can't remember at all what anyone said or even what we said. That's pamada. And it's a loss of consciousness, an unfocused, unstructured kind of consciousness that very often leads us to regret or perhaps to despair. So practically, if we look now at a period of Zazen, maybe the last period of Zazen we did or any period, the instructions for what we do are very simple to begin with. To just sit still. Be attentive to breath or whatever you're working with. Notice what is occurring within and around you. Don't get carried away by thoughts and feelings or memories and plans. Just stay present. So this seems to be a very simple thing that we're asked to do. Although it's simple, as we each have no doubt discovered, it's not easy. In fact, what often upsets us or bewilders us is how extraordinarily difficult this simple thing can be. Isn't it bewildering? We've plumped ourselves down on a cushion and the bell is gone. And we're a little bit charged up and conscious, and we say, okay, I'm going to spend the next 30 minutes sitting. And usually for the first few minutes, everything goes well. But as soon as it becomes routine, as soon as we let our attention to the task fade away, what happens? We find ourselves suddenly invaded by thoughts and feelings and images and memories and fantasies, more than invaded, but grasping, that we have not intended in any sense to give rise to. We can't stop it. They're suddenly there in profusion. And what's curious also is that we don't actually, or at least rarely, notice when they arise. We're sitting here on our cushion, focused on what we consider our sense of what is good, namely being mindful, being present, being conscious, being aware, counting. And suddenly we're no longer mindful and present and conscious and aware. We're not here at all. We might call that spaced out. So we're off somewhere. We're thrown into what I spoke of this morning, a kind of forgetting, a kind of forgetfulness. You know, sometimes if a very powerful fantasy takes hold, it's very vivid and clear, and we keep replaying and indulging. And often what carries us off is something that when we come out of it, I notice I can barely recall it. What was that? What? Where was I? I don't even remember what it was that was so vivid and clear while I was in it. So interesting, bewildering. We've probably all had this experience sitting in Zazen where we might find the bell at the end comes when we're finishing a period. And we might even be a little woken up by this bell. Not that we've been asleep, but maybe not present. So when we hear it, there's a little bit of a whoa, right? It's interesting when somebody's dozing and a door slams or someone coughs, we're right up. So there is present. There's something that's not asleep, but it's not quite here. And we might feel that ourselves. We're going like this, and then all of a sudden we're and you jump up, right? And you're back. And then it goes again. So we have to remember and not forget in that when we wake up in that moment. And then we're maybe minutes have lapsed and we're since the time we noticed our breath. And although it must have been something engaging to have us taken away, we don't, again, no longer remember it, what it was. And it's, to me, it's like some fantasy that's dimly fading. It reminds me of like, I tell myself in the morning sometimes, as a dream maker, I want to remember my dreams. And then I'll wake up and it was so vivid just a moment ago. And then I wake up and I can't get it. It's like gone. I don't know if that's happened to you. There's kind of a dim, dull recollection and I try to get it back, but sometimes it's gone. And I think what this shows us is the extent to which much of our lives is a kind of forgetfulness in any kind of activity that becomes routine, like driving a car or what you do every day. It's easy for the motor functions of our organism to take over and the mind to drift. And we're simply not aware, we're not here. And I think that's the beauty of the repetition and the practice is that's maybe even one of the purposes is that we do something period after period after period and you realize it's like, here it comes, another one, and we start going out. It just dims out. It's like another period. And, you know, I remember my teacher asking me, like, I was the cook, and he says, I made oatmeal like every morning. That's all we had. We didn't have like all these choices we have now, like teff and amaranth. It was oatmeal like every day. And he asked me once, he said, so Hojin, how do you keep the oatmeal fresh every morning? You're making the same thing the same way every morning. And he didn't want me to answer him then. But it was like, how do I not fall into that routine every day and go to sleep, that it's new. So apamada is an absence of pamada. I love these Sanskrit words. Like papanka. Papanka, I've talked about it before, it means proliferation. When we keep going with a thought, we proliferate. Papanka. I like to just say it. I think I'll name a pet. Papanka, like a dog. Proliferation. It's kind of, they do that. So it's apamada, the absence of pamada. It's not focus, the opposite of being drunk, the opposite of being completely spaced out, of being inebriated or out of control. And then there was this one German translator, I didn't get his name, but he translated as, and if you're German, I might be saying it poorly, Wachsame Sorge. Wachsame means wakeful or watchful, and Sorge means something like care or concern. So it comes out as watchful concern or watchful care. So maybe in thinking about it, it's not much different from mindfulness or awareness, perhaps. I don't know. Some Buddhists comment on this word, say apamada is often included as the seventh step of the Eightfold Path. That's what we're studying. The seventh step is right attention or right mindfulness. I like the word complete rather than right. Complete attention, complete mindfulness. Because sometimes we'll oppose right to something that's wrong. And that's not what that word right means. It means complete. So there's clearly a sense that care is a carefulness in how we attend to things. And it has to do with being present rather than being absent, with being here, cultivating awareness, opposed to being forgetful, absent, drifting off. So it comes back to a quality of presence of mind and connection. Really a connection of not being apart from anything. So these are the very last words the Buddha uttered according to the Mahaparinirvana Sutta. Care is the path to the deathless. Carelessness is the path to death. The caring do not die. The uncaring are already dead. And the Buddha is now saying this where he's old and sick, but lucid as ever. And how we respond to this truth, care is the path to deathless, carelessness is the path to death, goes directly to the core, the heart of our practice. Now, deathless refers to being fully awake, being fully alive, responsive. And death refers to being under the spell of Mara, who I often talk about, the lord of death, the lord of fear, our fear, temptation, our turning away, our being imprisoned by our craving, aversion, anger, ignorance, not being fully conscious or alive, but instead being caught up in our habitual unreflective existence. So Buddha said, care is something to be cultivated, something to be developed, and somehow brings together the heart of everything. Conditions are subject to decay, Buddha said. Work out your lifeline, your reclamation, with care. So it seems to encompass a wide complex of mental states. Here's another one, a passage Stephen Batchelor cited in the Samyutta Nikaya, the Connected Discourses of the Buddha, where Buddha compares care, apamada, to an elephant's footprint. Here, he told his friend King Upasanata of Kosala. Care is one thing that encompasses all the virtues. Just as the footprints of all beings that walk fit into the footprint of an elephant, so care is the one thing that secures all kinds of good. It's nice. And he reiterated this point to his own mendicant followers, returning to the analogy of the elephant's footprint. He said, so too, whatever wholesome and good states there are, they are all rooted in care, converge on care, and care is considered the chief among them. The elephant's footprint is considered to be the largest footprint of every animal in the jungle, and a footprint in which all other footprints of all other animals are able to fit. So this image of the elephant's footprint holding everything has kind of an embracing quality that holds the whole thing together. Care is what holds everything together in an embracing quality because things fall apart. So when we care, it holds what's falling apart together. But perhaps apamada is for describing the character, a kind of person who is committed to this sort of path. Someone who deeply cares or deeply embraces. So another one of its complex kind of meanings. In another sutra, Buddha is said to have said, monks, I know no single thing of such power to cause the arising of wholesome states, if not yet arisen, or to cause the waning of unwholesome states, if already arisen, as care, as apamada. Now, a sangha who was a meditator, a scholar, practitioner with a very brilliant mind. There's a lot of dedications to a sangha in India. Thought about these ideas a lot and with a lot of clarity. And he defined apamada as, I love this, that which energetically cherishes the good and guards the mind against what gives rise to afflictions, to things that are causing harm or hindrance. So he has a bit of a moral and ethical orientation, showing that care is just not about being watchful or awake or alert. It's not diligence, which was another definition. Because, of course, somebody who's diligent can do all kinds of terrible things. I could say our president is very diligent. I don't know that he cares all that much, but he's so diligent at what he does. So I don't... that definition doesn't work. So amapada or care has a moral quality to it. It has to do with what a sangha says, energetically cherishing good. That's part of the morality, one of the three pure precepts. Energetically cherishing good, practicing good, actualizing good for others, not creating harm. That's care. It's those pure precepts, maybe in that one elephant footprint, the basket. So what is it to apply ourselves energetically? It's to apply ourselves with some conscious effort. This f- feeling of care is not an occasional mindful thought or an attentive state of mind. It's actually a commitment to being attentive. That's care, not just a meditative state of mind or being mindful. It has to do with our primary moral and ethical orientation that we have in our life, if you think about it, which we bring into being whatever activity we're involved or engaged in, whether it's zazen or interaction with people, in our social concerns, our political choices. It's the energetic cherishing of what we regard as good. And I found this piece by David White, which I thought was interesting, what he wrote about anger. And could anger be a form of care? Because we all don't want to be an angry person, but I was thinking, sometimes it means we care, really care. And he writes, anger is the deepest form of compassion for another, for the world, for the self, for the body, for a family, and for all our ideals, all vulnerable and all possibly about to be hurt. Stripped of physical imprisonment and violent reaction, anger is the purest form of care. The internal living flame of anger always illuminates what we belong to, what we wish to protect, and what we are willing to hazard ourselves for. What we usually call anger is only what is left of its essence when we are overwhelmed by it, when it reaches our body's incapacity to hold it. Energetic cherishing of what we regard as good. So if we can channel our anger into this energetic good, it can serve when it comes out of care, really true care. We know we can also do the other, destroy everything we've worked for in one word. One action. This anger can also put it all out, but it can also rise it up. And I was thinking, I don't know that I know exactly what good means. It's a rather large question for me, maybe for you. But as it's understood in the Buddha Dharma, the highest good is awakening. That's the highest good. In the light, enlightenment. Bodhicitta, or perhaps the bodhisattva, with the spontaneous wish to attain enlightenment, motivated by great compassion for all sentient beings, accompanied by a falling away of the attachment to the illusion of an inherently existing self. In a practice sense, we humans can optimally become a kind of intuition, a trust and faith in what it is that we as confused people, as suffering people, can in the course of our lives aspire to reveal. To reveal ourselves, our true self, to ourself. So, apamada is the intention which guides us and directs us and inspires us, that energizes us, that commits us to what we consider to be good. That's the sense of that word, care. And we can summarize it also as wisdom, compassion, tolerance, all these virtues that we possess and encouraged to bring forth all the paramitas, generosity, patience. Effort is in there. Diligence is listed as effort. The precepts. So maybe it's not really, or somewhat, a state of mind, but maybe more like a perspective or a sensibility or an orientation oriented towards caring. It's a commitment to what we honor as good, and at the same time, it guards the mind against what gives rise to affliction. So there's something protective about this commitment to what is good, guarding against those impulses and drives and habits of mind that seek us to turn away. So caring is when we face Mara. What overwhelms and distracts us and causes fear, we face that because we care. It's about being fully conscious where we started, being fully present. Being fully present is what guards the mind against and what gives rise to affliction. As long as we're present, it's actually very difficult for those impulsive, distracted thoughts to get a grip. But as soon as that presence of mind slips, it's like those weasels in The Wind in the Willows. You know, as soon as the frog, the prince, or the mayor leaves his house, remember all the weasels took over. It's like that's what happens with us. We lose our presence and then it's like, party, party, right? And they just start, you know, sitting in his seat, trying his clothes on, playing with all his stuff. So we have that built in. And then in the writings of Shantideva, we're all familiar with, who wrote the Way of the Bodhisattva, he says the defilements, the negative states of mind, are compared to bands of thieves who roam around us waiting for an opportunity to invade the house of our mind and steal its treasures, similar to the weasels. He compares mindfulness to a guardian at the gateway of the senses that's continually alert to the potential invasions of attachment, aversion, greed, jealousy, whatever. So we have to be guarding, like when that stuff comes in, we have to say like, oh, no. You ain't stealing my treasures, right? That's apamada. That presence of mind is that guardian. Like we know it's there. It's around us. We're aware of it. So I think that's this image point, these thieves point to the kind of careful conscious awareness that were needed. And if we're conscious at that time of what is going on at that time, we won't be distracted. Because we're not always conscious of being unconscious till it's conscious. So distraction is not something I don't think we're necessarily aware of. But we might be at that moment that it gets a grip. Then we might fall into a semi-conscious state that something's going on. It's not completely unconscious. And it doesn't mean we don't function, but we don't suddenly collapse into a blubbering puddle like the Wicked Witch of the West melts. We still appear to be functioning perfectly, adequately, and perfectly well. And we spend a lot of time like that in our life, whether we want to admit it, semi-conscious. So the practice of taking air is to be care is to be continually on guard about the loss of consciousness. Death refers to being under the spell of Mara, the lord of death, fear, temptation, turning away, being imprisoned by craving, aversion, anger, and ignorance, not being fully and consciously alive, but instead being caught up in our habitual, unreflective existence. And we know where that goes. But all in all, I think it's the most incredible last words of the Buddha. On his deathbed, expressing his depth of love for all beings, for this great earth. Take good care. Take good care. That's what he said. Pretty good. I have this book called I Am That, or is it I Am This? This or that? I Am That, yes. Nisargadatta Maharaj. And he had this, I'll end with a nice quote from him. When I look inside and see that I am nothing, that's wisdom. When I look outside and see that I am everything, that's love. Between these two, my life turns. Take care.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma Talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject. J-E-C-T.